And your pose for your Skype picture there is that pose you tell people to make when you want them to look smart.
Oh, really? Am I touching my chin? Because you know that's totally what that is.
That's
my fake smart looking thing. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host, Todd Conklin. I am here for a while, that's for sure. Hey, I hope everything's going groovy and cool, and both groovy and cool. You know, spring's almost here, you guys. I don't know if you're feeling it, but everything bloomed a little early this year. It's kind of I like the summer. So I hung some new lights over my patio. I got the grill all set up. I think I'm wanting it to be – it's not going to be summer yet. We still got some cold ahead of us, at least in New Mexico. But it's coming. We're going to get there, that's for sure. Everything's groovy. This podcast is kind of fun. I think you're going to like it. Bob and I did our after-action review for our learning workshop that we just held a week ago. And I thought, let's kind of put this on because there's lots of interesting stuff. And you can kind of get a feel for what the class is like in case you couldn't take the class or you weren't able to get there or whatever the case is. There's also a surprise announcement in the middle of this, and so that'll be kind of fun as well. This is a cute little podcast, and it's just a conversation. It's two friends sitting around talking, but we're talking about what we thought was good and rich about bringing a group of people, about 32 people together to talk about operational learning and where we could improve, what adjustments we made while we were going. It's a pretty fun little conversation, and it's a great little podcast. I think you're going to enjoy it immensely. Until then, man, I don't know if there's much else, you know, it's just everything keeps, I hope you're doing good. That's what matters. Yeah, I'm just trying. I can't decide to watch the news or not watch the news. You know, how much do I want to be involved? The world is just a crazy place right now. Let's just leave it there and be happy with that as an answer and tell you that there's a ray of hope, because as it relates to the way we're managing, understanding, and leading safety in organizations for 2017 and beyond, there's great things happening. Smart people are thinking about smart ideas, and we're sort of in a way doing things differently, but in a way going right back to some first principles and how good organizations operate reliably. And that's what we want to chat about. There's so much to chat about. Haven't been arrested yet on a plane, so don't have any exciting news there. Everything seems to be pretty normal, knock on some wood. That's pretty much my whole life right there. Everything is grand and perfect. So let's listen to the podcast. I'll shut up because clearly I got nothing to say. Listen to Bob and I. We're going to chat about the Learning Team Workshop After Action Review. Here it goes.
Wow. I mean, first of all, it was just fun to have that many people in one place that all want to do this. You know, I think that's the coolest thing about the workshops that we're doing is everybody that's coming are all people that want to get better at this. And I thought they were really engaged. I thought it was a great couple of days.
What's the value you think they get out of it? I mean, you know, not speaking about how good it was, but how good it sort of sets them up for the future. That's the part that I think is most interesting.
Yeah. I think the thing we really tried to do was have them do enough practicing. I mean, it's kind of a safe place to practice, right? Because I mean, if we mess up, it's no big deal. If we do great, it's great. But I think it kind of gave them a chance to really understand the importance of the questions we ask, how we ask them, the whole notion of soak time. And it was kind of fun. We actually built soak time into the training so that we literally experienced what it's like to, you know, have a little time to soak on this particular case study that we were working on, and then the next day pick it up just like we would with the regular learning team.
So what was the case study you guys worked on?
It was I love powered industrial vehicle stories. It's kind of like everybody can relate to a fork truck about running into something. And so, yeah, so we used one of those. We have several of them, but we used actually a couple of them, but one was a near miss where a fork truck took a quick turn to the left because someone stepped in front of him and he almost swiped some people with a basket full of parts. It was fun because we I know some people probably think it's cheesy to role play, but it actually can be pretty productive because, you know, everybody picked a different role. One person was the fork truck driver. One was the safety leader. One was the person that almost got hit. One was the person that cut in front of the fork truck. It was just really kind of fun to let them act the parts out. And then somebody was the coach, and they got to try their hand at coaching.
I thought that was interesting, too, because one of the students took the scenario, the script for the scenario, and actually reformatted it so that every character got their own piece of information and kind of filled it out. I mean, I thought the person who did that did an amazing job. It was such a nice thing to do. It'll make this case study a lot more effective. But what I thought was most interesting is the reason he did it is because he said, I don't think the coach should know any of this stuff.
Yeah. So I thought that was brilliant.
He didn't do it to give more and better information to the role players, you know, to the fork driver and the person who was walking. He did it to actually put the coach in a position where there were no biases and no predetermined decisions before they actually went in to do the learning. And I thought that was really an interesting thing.
Uh-oh, you're cutting out.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, you said you thought that was a really and then I lost you.
Oh, yeah, I said interesting thing.
Well, so it's Kaizen, right? Continuous improvement. We're at its best right there. Somebody going through the very workshop that we put together and helping us make it even better. I thought it was fantastic.
How close is this workshop to some kind of sort of lean training or lean event or lean theory?
Well, I think that the learning team approach helps with Kaizen, you know, the continuous improvement processes that we're trying to do in factories. Because it really does help us understand more about the struggles of the guys doing the work. And I think that a lot of times with Kaizans, we go in there, we watch the work for a few minutes, and then because we're all so stinking smart, we jump in there and start fixing stuff. And then we walk away after the Kaizen event, and the workers are like, what the crap was that? You know, they change it back to what it was before. So I think this helps us actually get better at listening and learning to the people that actually do the work.
So talk a little more about this. We're also stinking smart part of the phrase you just – well, there's two things you've said. One is I love powered industrial equipment. That just strikes me as creepy. I'm just going to say that. And secondly, this idea of we're also stinking smart, because one of the things that came out of the after action review we did after the workshop was over was this realization that we really do sort of predetermine solutions, and when we predetermine solutions, we're so convinced it's the right solution that we oftentimes don't even test the solution. We don't even prototype or micro experiment the test. Talk about that a little, because I think that's really got some value.
Well, it's, you know, we even had it happen in the workshop where the coaches were saying it's so hard to not go ahead and try to solve the problem. Because I mean, I think it's good that we want to solve problems because that makes life better, except that what has happened, this is what I've seen anyway, is we've pushed so hard for this sort of find it, fix it mentality. Give me an answer. What's the one thing we can do right now? Fix this now, right? Don't take time on this. Get this done. And so we've pushed ourselves so hard to find it, fix it, that we've lost sort of the desire to take the time to learn. So we're not really – I'm not talking about everybody. I'm just kind of talking about my own experience. I would tend to jump in and because I'm an engineer and I've designed a bunch of stuff and built a lot of stuff, I think I have an answer already. Instead of listening to the guys and realizing maybe – not only do I not have the best answer, maybe they really have a way better and in many cases simpler answer because they're so close to the work, it's going to be more practical and more doable.
How does that impact our inability to try stuff?
Well, so, you know, this is, God, the questions you're asking, you'd think that we sat down ahead of time and put all these together.
Yeah, except that we should probably say we did not do that. So in case you think we're rehearsing this, you would be – so wrong. So sadly wrong.
Yep. Wow. I talked to so many sites that are I'll be at a trade show or something, and not a trade show, but like a safety conference. And I'll say, okay, where are my lean manufacturing sites? And people raise their hands. And I'll say, you know, when we're doing these learning teams, we love to try storm. you guys know what I'm talking about, right? And many, if not most, look at me like I have two heads. Like, what are you talking about, TriStorm? So to me, one of the fundamental foundational pieces of Lean that has helped me more than anything else in making a site more efficient is the ability to micro-experiment, to try things out. TriStorming is like brainstorming, except you try it out, and it's duct tape and cardboard and simple ways of testing our ideas before we lock them in. And what was cool about the intersection problem with the fork and tuggers is the way they tri-stormed that intersection when they rebuilt it was with black tape over top of the current yellow lines on the floor and yellow duct tape to try several different configurations of the intersection until they got it the way they wanted it. They left it like that for a week or so, and then we painted it, you know, had the company come in and contractor come in and paint it. So having that ability to not spend a lot of money and to try things out, to experiment, I just think is one of the most powerful ways to solve problems.
And I guess, I mean, the next question I would ask, I guess, is what do you think it is that's – so people aren't stupid. I mean
– No.
What do you think it is that has made them forget about the power of prototyping or not remember to use prototyping? I mean, I think there's so much pressure for people to come up with the grand solution to a problem
right.
that they sort of roll problems out without testing it. And that just strikes me as kind of goofy, but people do it all the time.
Yeah. I think totally people are trying to solve things and make things better. I really do believe that. I think what happens a lot of times is let's say I'm an engineer. Let's just pretend for a minute I'm an engineer, right?
Okay. I'm pretending.
Okay. So I believe that I can solve all kinds of problems because I'm an engineer. So the problem is presented. It was a incident, an event, a near miss, a quality escape, whatever it is that we're working on. And I immediately think they've paid me to come here and solve this because I'm an engineer. Well, maybe, I mean, yeah, there's nothing, I mean, it's great being an engineer, but I don't actually do the work. And so I probably need to stop and listen to the guys who actually do the work because they may have a way better idea. And they still need me. Don't get rid of engineers. We're important. But the actual, sometimes the solutions, some of the most elegant, simple, clean, doable solutions that I've seen in doing hundreds of learning teams now have come directly from the people right there at the tip of the spear, if you will, or the pointy end of the stick, or where the work is really going on.
Well, and I think you're right. I mean, I agree with you 100% on what you said. My guess is that same input issue that we use around operational learning, get better inputs, you get better outputs. That same input issue, I think, is the problem with prototyping or tri-storming, is that once we're convinced this is the solution, and I think that's a function of being convinced that this is the problem.
Right.
So once we know the problem and create the solution, it's really almost seen as a waste of time to actually go out and practice or try the solution. And yet we know that when we don't prototype, the solution we roll out is not going to be, you know, it's one size does not fit all, and it's probably not going to work as written. So I don't know. That class does a really interesting thing. If I had to pick what that class does, where it sort of helps define the input process, and then that actually defines the output process. So I would say the learning team workshop doesn't spend a lot of time on the learning product. Like, we don't talk about what the product is or what the product looks like. It spends all of its time talking about the learning effort, the analysis effort.
Right.
I think that's a really interesting difference in sort of the way this safety differently, this new safety is looking at it, is that the learning output is really not, it's probably not terribly dramatic or very fancy. You know, the fix to the problem probably kind of writes itself if the analysis of the problem is really good. So if we have good problem definition, then actually that sort of creates, it sets us up to actually create good solutions.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that we too many times, you know, because Monday morning in the production meeting, we need an answer, right? I mean, you don't come to that meeting if you don't have an answer. So I'll come to that meeting with you know, root cause, corrective action, who owns it, what's the status. I mean, it may have happened Saturday night. I don't even know anything yet, hardly, but I know the expectation is that I have a solution, so I don't take the time to learn. I think this is helping us all realize the importance of slowing down and really taking the time to learn so that, like you said, we have the problem really identified, and it does. It becomes much clearer on how to solve the problem.
Well, it's kind of weird because the pressure to determine cause cheats analysis.
Right.
And I'm just, I mean, talk to me about this because I'm just blabbing out now. But I always thought cause, determining a root cause, was a function of analysis. But now I'm starting to think that determining root cause is actually the enemy of analysis, that it almost forces you to simplify the process, to simplify whatever happened, whatever problem you're trying to solve, to really that single monocausal thing you can fix, and then fix it and sort of cross your fingers and hope it works.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Although monocausal actually sounds like a cool ride for Disneyland or something, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah,
I'm gonna ride the monocausal.
But
yeah.
You have to be at least as tall as Mickey's hand.
Right. I think you're exactly right. I think root cause, and people sometimes get a little nervous when we talk about that we're not so focused on root cause anymore. But I do. I think that once we think we have the root cause, then, buddy, get out of the way. We're going to fix that root cause. And we do. And then 2 weeks later or 2 months later or 2 years later, we have almost the same thing happen again because all we did was really kind of fix the trigger of that event, if you will.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I mean, that's sort of worth thinking about. And that's one of the cool things that workshop could do. Do people have to go to these workshops? Are there ways they can get this without going to the workshop? Or should everyone go to a workshop? What do you think?
Well, so, you know, we've been trying to develop that learning team pill that everybody could take, and then they just have it down, right? Just take the pill twice a day, and you'll be good to go.
Will that be covered under Obamacare, or do you know?
No, I'm not sure yet. We may have to figure something out there. I think that I think the workshops were fun because for one thing, I thought that this was really cool. A lot of people from a lot of different industries, they're doing exactly what we're trying to do with the podcast and anything else that we can do to help build a network and build a community, if you will. Yeah, I think community is a better term than network because network sounds like I only like you because I might need you. But that may be a little judgy, but I think a community of sort of thinking and acting and this new view of doing stuff. I've just watched, I think they got as much value from the break sessions of talking to each other and getting to know each other as they do from spending time listening to me, for sure.
Well, I agree with you. You know, one of my favorite people to think about is a guy named Thomas Kuhn, and he's a contemporary philosopher, but he's a philosopher of science. So he really thinks about science, and Kuhn uses the phrase, the community of thought, and he also calls it the invisible college. And what it is it's different than a network, because a network, you're right, is really utilitarian. I build a network. So like I got a really good butcher, and so I can always get really good steaks. I got a really good window guy that can replace windows. I got a really good plumber that I use. That's a network. Those are people that sort of, they're there when I need them and they do really good work. That's not bad. But a community is a supportive learning organization that is constantly working sort of for the betterment of everybody. In fact, that's one of the things that I think is interesting, is that learning is really a common good. It's an organizational positive. It's good for the organization, and we all share it. And I think that's really, really important. To me, the question – well, so let me ask this question. I'm getting these out of order a little. Should we do another learning workshop? And I'm wide open. If you say yes, we could do one. If you say no, that's fine. Kind of a lot of work.
Right. I've got an idea. Why don't we do one in Berlin?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. We haven't told them about this.
Never mind.
No, go ahead and break the news on that. That's fine. I didn't even think about that one.
That one's so exotic that I didn't think about it. What was that? You were breaking up.
Oh, that one's so exotic that I didn't even think about talking about that one. Go ahead and tell them. You can have the joy.
Well, so we are planning our next workshop, which will be a 2.5-day workshop. And it's going to be actually in Berlin, so that our friends in Europe that would like to join us with this stuff that we're doing can come hang out with us for a few days. And it'll start with a full day of fundamentals. We kind of combine like the two workshops we've done here in the U.S. recently. You know, we're actually going to, since we're going all the way over there, we're going to do one day fundamentals and then a day and a half of learning teams, kind of put our two workshops together that we've been putting together here.
Okay. So whatever you're doing right now, let me give you a hint. First of all, if you're going to do more podcasts, buy a better microphone. And secondly, quit grabbing whatever you're grabbing.
Well, I'm trying to get to the schedule because I figure you're going to say, and what dates are those? Because I can't get my stupid calendar open. I guess we'll send that information out soon, right?
Yeah. How about if I put it on the front of the podcast? I can do that.
That's a great idea.
Now, will you put the microphone closer to your mouth, please?
I will. I don't know where the microphone is. I'm on my stupid laptop.
Yeah. Well, everyone who's listening to this can tell.
Right.
You sound like you have a little mouse voice coming out. So.
Well, I do have kind of a little mouse voice. I'm small.
Yeah. Just small. Small if tallness doesn't count. That's how that works. Small.
All right. So can you hear me better now?
Yeah. You sound great. So we got the one in Berlin. And to be really fair, I don't even think about that on our workshop list because that one's going to be so much fun and kind of exotic for us because we get to go over there and do a workshop. And special thanks to Andrea Baker for helping to coordinate that. If you're in Europe or if you're in, anywhere, certainly UK, this is a kind of a local call for you guys. You're more than welcome to attend. We'd love to have you, and we'll get details about that. Should we do another one in the United States?
I think so. Yep, I think so.
So because we limit it to kind of a small class size, I think there was probably more desire than there were spaces. So that's probably a pretty good idea. What would you change?
Well, I think I would make sure in advance we have a big enough room.
Yeah, yeah. We did, though. We got a nice room this time. We just had to change it.
We totally did. That's right. We totally did. As far as what we would change, I definitely think we should use the new and improved simulation that the gentleman, updated and sent back to us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. That's a given, too. What's your objective for something like this?
To give people some confidence. You know, when I used to teach emergency response stuff like high angle rescue and CPR and first aid and all that, my whole goal was to give people the confidence that, hey, I can do this. I can go do this and I can actually get really good at this. And so that's what my goal is. What's your goal?
So I always want to have fun. I like that. And I want to give people the opportunity that don't normally maybe get to hang out with NewView, build that community. So individual safety people or thinkers or engineers that their company's not really ready to go on this journey yet. I think that's a great opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity for smaller companies that maybe can't afford to bring in a Rob Fisher or a Tony Machara, a Bill Rigo, those kind of guys. It's a great little sheep dip of some of the new theories. And I just think it's kind of fun. One of the reasons I think it's fun, though, is because they're small. If they were larger, like I didn't even really get to talk to the ladies from Miller Coors, and we weren't even that many people. And so, it'd be nice if we could even make them a little smaller. But I think the size we have is probably about right. And just give them an opportunity to practice, because it really is about confidence and skill. And adult learners, if you give them a chance to try it, so tell them what to do. And then let them see what it looks like, and then let them actually participate in one, and then they can go out and actually lead one. And that seems to be kind of the magic recipe for most anything in adult learning, but it's really true with this idea of operational learning through learning teams. And it's a great idea. The thing that keeps me going is that I know this makes companies better. I mean, it's not stealing. It's not morally questionable. It's not ethically questionable. It actually makes companies better. If they'll listen to their workers, their problem identification becomes better and their solution identification becomes better. And that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. And then when they start, I mean, how many companies now are asking us to help them and they're doing it themselves too, but to study successful work. And we're finding that successful work doesn't look that different from failure, except for the outcome. And man, we're getting some really good operational intelligence when there's not even been a near miss or a good catch or a problem. It's just successful work going on. I think that's really exciting.
And that shouldn't surprise us, right? I mean, because right. we know if you look at events, events exist in successful work. I mean, that we know that happens. And we know that not everything in the company failed, just enough things failed to allow the outcome to be successful. And so, you know, the power of looking at work that hasn't failed yet is really the difference between reacting to consequence and responding to context. And man, anytime we can respond to context, anytime we can respond early and effectively, which I think the learning teams really help them do, we know we're successful. I mean, that's the power of this operational learning stuff. It's good. And you're good at it too. I mean, it's quite fun to watch you because you're masterful at it. I think it's even more accurate to say you've thought about this a whole lot, and then you just have so much experience. It's pretty cool.
Well, thank you. It's like we've talked about before. I don't know how to not do this at this point in my life. This seems like the thing that I should be doing to help any way I can. I love it to see. I love to see people come and be excited about this. That they might even do something like, I don't know, take their own vacation and pay their own way. We won't mention any names, but she was like our hero that week.
That's amazing. That's amazing that this is so important and this change is so new and different that people are coming to this. We had several people there that actually took leave and came under their own power to actually participate in this class. And that's pretty impressive. That's pretty cool.
That's very exciting.
Final word, summary. What's the big takeaway?
To the next one and look forward to... Uh-oh, we're breaking up again.
No, I was talking and you interrupted me.
Well, from my end, it sounded like you were breaking up again.
Well, with that microphone, I'm really surprised, actually, you could hear anything.
I got the headset in, so I can hear you really well. You just can't hear me really well.
Well, so we invited people to be a part of our after action. I can't even talk about our after action review. I mean, I think it was a good time. Thanks for doing it, man. That was great.
Oh, my pleasure.
And there you have it. A little glimpse into a conversation, an after action review, if you will, between Bob and I, yakking it up about the learning workshop and sort of what we learned in the learning workshop. And I don't know, I thought it was worth sharing for you guys. The workshop in Europe, as promised, because it was promised, is September 5th, 6th, and 7th. So 5th, 6th, and 7th of September in Europe is when we're going to do that workshop. That was fun. I don't know, it's always kind of fun to bust on Bob for his little skinny-sounding microphone, you know, and his amazingly busy time chatting with me about stuff and junk and, you know, important things that we do. That's the podcast for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Listen carefully. There are many more great ones to come. Oh my goodness. Things are getting kind of exciting. That's for sure. The numbers are huge. Thanks for listening. And tell your friends, subscribe, write a review. Do me a favor. Think of somebody who you think ought to listen to this podcast. It would be helped by sort of listening to these conversations. And send them a list of the podcast, and let's see if we can get some new blood in this. If you want to be on or if you've got ideas, give me a call. I'm getting lots of good ones. So until then, though, you know what I always say. Learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.